Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we're sat here in the rugby dungeon on another beautiful weekend, but with no natural light, only, what, about 10 hours of rugby watching, well, 30 hours of rugby watching between the three of us, myself, Tim, JB right there.
Hello.
In his Sam Burgess-esque bath vest.
Didn't age well, did it?
Although Sam Burgess chalked up a win with his rugby league England colleagues in Denver, was it?
Yeah,
Denver,
who they were playing overseas.
Yeah. Against New Zealand.
That worries me, that one. I think actually America is a place where rugby league could really do well.
Exactly.
The bit that I'm not worried about, though, is that rugby league cannot organise a piss in a brewery. So I'm not too worried about that.
I didn't watch the game. Did you watch the game?
No, I didn't.
And there's Phil right there wearing a Columbia football shirt.
Columbia. The dedication to this pod, I'm missing my beloved Colombia, who are playing right now against Poland.
Actually, there's just one thing I remembered. It would be quite a good musical way to set the tone for the show, actually. Where is it? It was from last night. Oh, I'm going to find it. Oh, I'll find it and come back to you. We've got loads to talk about, obviously, on this. The end of the June tests, which has been a triumphant series. It's great seeing these three-match series between big rugby nations, isn't it?
France, certainly is.
New Zealand, Ireland in Australia, and England in South Africa. It's been brilliant.
Yeah, and it's actually good that Wales was only a two-match series, because they probably got enough out of those two games against Argentina.
Yeah.
And then for Scotland, who had a magnificent performance against Argentina.
Right, here we go. Here's what I've got for you. So you talk about America can't organise a piss-up in a brewery. Here is an American woman doing the New Zealand national anthem in Denver.
Oh!
That's the Maori bit.
Oh! Oh, so bad! Oh no! I'll just pull it back a bit now.
So that was the Maori bit. She sort of got there by the end of the Maori bit, but anyway, it was dreadful. Ooh. It was dreadful. It's just and what has happened this summer to anthems and referees? They've both gone to
anthems and pre-match entertainment. The South Africa tribal dancers.
That was my favourite bit of the whole weekend.
I couldn't enjoy that because I was so worried they were going to impale themselves on a spear. Yeah. People were laughing. I'm not laughing if that
tribal dancers was my favourite 90s band, actually. I love the tribal dancers running around with their spears. That's pretty cool. Also, I'm going to have to say, I really am starting to enjoy the variety in the Australian welcome to country, although the week before last will not be beaten. No. Everyone's got a scully a pint. And it's not the most wholesome message, but I like that. Not a great weekend for pre-match rituals.
And there was another couple of suspect refereeing decisions as well.
Which ones are you referring to there?
Israel Folau.
Take your pick.
Why, I missed. What's the Israel Folau one?
Folau yellow card for the slightest contact with Peter Omani in the air when he was being lifted by CJ Stander. But CJ Stander didn't have any sort of balance or control, and Peter Omani landed on his head. more because of Stander rather than Folau.
I missed that one.
Yeah.
Very, very pivotal moment it was. I have sympathy with... Australians weren't happy. I have sympathy with the decision at the very end of the game when it looked like Jacob Stockdale may have knocked the ball forward when the try line was begging, but it was inconclusive, so I'm happy with that decision.
Yeah.
But the other one was, of course, John Lacey doing a fantastic NFL offensive lineman blocking manoeuvre on Baptiste Serran.
Yeah.
He is not a confident man, that's what I would say.
Well, so I think... Yeah, he didn't have his best game. I think that was such a weird situation because even if Lacey wasn't there, the French didn't have anyone marking Damien McKenzie at 10.
There was no way Serran was going to tackle McKenzie.
And if he does...
I think he would have.
The problem is, if Serran bolts for McKenzie, then Aaron Smith just shows and goes.
Yeah, but you've got a flanker on the inside.
That would have been a try no matter what happened.
Disagree.
There.
And not only do I disagree strongly, I think this try tells you all you need to know about Lacey. I mean, he's relatively arrogant, and sometimes arrogance is a cover for lack of confidence.
I'm happy.
Yeah. And I actually think he was so worried about that try not being allowed and him being at fault, they thought, well, I'm going to be at fault anyhow. But it's just a remarkably arrogant decision.
I'm not sure he quite got to the right place. Well, he didn't get to the right
place.
It was just arrogant. He didn't get there in the right way.
Well, a lot of people have come out and said he can't do anything in the laws of the game. There's nothing he can do.
Yeah, you haven't.
But there is an outlet for referees to call a scrum for any other reason not explicitly written in law.
The
laws. I believe that to be the case.
Yeah.
So he could have just said, I'm really sorry, guys. I apologise. We're going to have another scrum.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen things similar, like players bumping into refs and scrums being awarded. So, there's no reason not to. Just lack the confidence to do it.
Yeah. And England... And the other thing is, it's all the worries are behind us. We're back on track to be world champions. Everything's rosy in the England Garden.
What were you just saying about arrogance there, JB?
Well...
All the problems are gone now. It's all solved and everything's hunky-dory.
I don't know where to start with this one. It's certainly not everything is hunky-dory, which I don't really think anyone believes. But I think it will do Eddie Jones and England a world of good just to get the win, even though it wasn't the greatest performance and it was a weakened Springboks team.
The errors in this game were just so numerous.
Yeah, the conditions... did not help whatsoever.
I was amazed, actually, how ineffective... South African 8. He had such a good save, such a big physical guy. You'd have thought, in a wet.
Yeah.
And Snyman. Snyman's been an absolute beast for the last two tests. Didn't really see much of him.
It's a fair point, that, because they didn't... And I would... So I know you don't believe the altitude issues... I would genuinely put some of that down to altitude.
But
I think
they all don't train at altitude.
Well, no, some of them do. Not all of them do.
It's the first time England have won a test match in South Africa in 18 years.
First win at Newlands ever.
Yeah. I mean, a win's a win. You've got to be happy with that. I do wonder if it's a bit of a dead cat bounce for England, though.
I think there's some positives, both in terms of individual performances and unit performances. And I think some credit has to go to Eddie Jones for making a couple of changes. I thought Cipriani coming back for the first time in 10 years.
Starting for the first time in a starting position,
yeah, was the right call. And I wouldn't have picked it. I would have stuck with George Ford.
That's insane.
But he was vindicated for doing that. And I also thought something interesting was, so the previous two tests, England had really, really struggled when South Africa changed their full front row at once.
Yes.
England's pack just went backwards immediately.
Kitsoff is a ridiculous specimen.
Isn't he good? He's so good.
He's
I didn't
brilliant.
Appreciate him really until this test series.
Yeah. And Thomas Toy, the 135kg tight head, whatever he is, they didn't in this test, and so I thought he was going to counteract it by having a near all Exeter pack, because he could have had Cowan Dickey, Hepburn, Williams, Johnny Hill and Sam Simmons all slot into that pack. Mm. And if there's one thing we know about that Exeter pack is they can handle just about anyone up front, be it Saracens, Leinster, a pretty much international pack at Leinster, or Montpellier, which is an enormous South African pack. In the end, he didn't actually make the changes at that time, and the pack were holding their own, but he'd given himself the option to go with something that that he knew would work.
Yeah, I think the Cipriani thing, I mean, it sort of highlights the stupidity of the whole situation to start with. Danny Cipriani should have been in that team in the Six Nations. He might have, maybe even before that, even when they were winning. To think you've got to go through five losses to then give the guy a chance in horrible conditions. He puts it onto his left foot when nobody thinks that that move is possible. He puts it onto his wrong foot. If that ball carries on going, it probably dissects the part of the pitch where the dead ball line meets the touchline. So it's an almost perfect kick. He's used every ounce of space that he's allowed. And then he's identified the only man on the entire field that can probably make that play, and he scores. And you think, England have missed that for what reason? Why? And for how long? It's ridiculous.
So I would say George Ford can do similar things.
Similar, but not as good.
Well,
not as good.
So I would say that that Cipriani performance was, certainly the last time we saw him in a starting role, he was this mercurial, can run it from anywhere, can do everything. He's not that player anymore.
I think he's better.
For the better, yeah. I was going to say for the better, because he's far more controlled, which is something that I think George Ford can do very, very well.
George Ford, at this point in his career, might be a better runner. Might be. I don't know. But no one, and I'd probably add the New Zealand lads to this as well. Actually, maybe not. Let's just stick with Northern Hemisphere players for now. Nobody can pass a ball and pick an option like Danny Cipriani. Nobody. I think this game just highlighted the, a certain amount of arrogance in the England camp not to have played him.
Well, I think we all agree that Sippers would have been worth a shot and would have been certainly worth being involved in squads before this summer tour. But I think it's overblowing his performance to say that the kick was amazing.
It
was a fairly, and the conditions dictated this, it was a fairly ordinary performance. And the vast majority of the tactical kicking and all of it, I think Ben Young's only passed to Cipriani seven times in the whole match.
Is that right?
Something like that.
Yeah, because I think the kick was amazing. I think you're exactly right. He was fairly anonymous besides that, but what he did very well. And
absolutely. I mean, and he deserves credit for it.
Did the basics
in my mind,
well.
that actually makes it even better. To think you only have so many... Well, no, seriously, it's like the old adage, isn't it? Like, a good striker scores when he's not playing well.
Yeah.
To have seven touches.
Goalkeeper who has nothing to do and then makes a world-class save.
That's sort of how I see this. I'd also say that when England go back, has it been a success? Obviously not, because you've lost a test series.
Yeah.
They've won the test match at the end, which is and the last one to win is a pretty good one, in fairness. But how would Dan Robson feel? How does Jason Woodward feel? Did Lazowski get any time at all? Maybe second test he got a bit?
No.
I think he was on the bench. No, he wasn't on the bench at all. No.
Yeah, I think he was on the bench second test. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is a lot of lads have wasted a lot of their summer going on a test. Going on a test series, not playing, I think it might have done more damage than it has good, actually.
I definitely don't think that. Because the most important thing, we said it 2 weeks ago, you boys said it last week, the most important thing is to win.
Lost.
It's almost win it all. No, just win. To win that final test match was the most important thing.
Yeah, but do you think they still win if, Springboks start with Pollard?
Hooker, 10 and 15. Three very important positions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced.
I'm not convinced either. I think they don't, and I think the wet conditions to have Faf and Yantis playing, it's not the conditions you want for those two boys, and to start Gallant, who showed some brilliant bits on occasion, but also he's nowhere near as experienced. He's way younger, nowhere near as experienced as Willie LaRue. I think you're probably right if you have the three starters there. South Africa win again.
England played the conditions better than South Africa. They played the referee better than South Africa, and that's I was particularly pleased with. They were on top of the penalty count this time. However, all of that is in the context of the game and the conditions dictated, the game was considerably slower than the first two tests. Mm. And I think basically England don't need Eddie Jones. They need to get a shaman as their head coach to do rain dances, because actually I think they can be a match for anyone when the pace is slower.
I tell you who they will not be a match for in any way, shape or form if it's a slow game in Six Nations is France. I mean, France will absolutely leather them.
Is it on the board yet?
Huh?
Is it on the board yet?
No, but the board needs to be updated because, of course, the board is now incorrect. Well, it's actually been incorrect twice. It was incorrect once because I was two right.
Yeah.
And it kind of evens out. I'm broadly right, even though I'm ultimately incorrect. It's basically a rounding error. It isn't a big deal.
So, obviously, Johnny May is a massive plus.
Yeah.
On this series. We've got the wrong May in Downing Street. With Johnny May's interest in North Korea, we need to get him into Downing Street. Get him sorting out that part of the world, because he can do no wrong at the minute. Other areas, Tom Curry had a great series.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, I tell you what, big winners from this, Sale Sharks.
Well, I mean, Faf Curry.
Do you know, I wrote down one thing. I said, if Faf was English, would he play in an Eddie Jones side?
Not even close.
Yeah, that's one of the things, that's the conclusion I came to as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the very few international scrum halves that doesn't spin the ball all the time. I mean, sometimes he'll just throw a custard pie. Like, it's just as long as it gets there, he doesn't care. He's so unusual. I think with a player like that, and it did backfire on South Africa because they played Yanchis. Now,
a terrible performance.
Yeah, an unfashionable view. I think Yanchis is class.
I think he's class.
But he just not today.
He didn't suit those conditions. He didn't suit that game.
Yeah, when he's on song, you know, when he's playing well, I think he is a bit of a world beater. But
well, he guided Lions to the Super Rugby final, didn't he, a couple of seasons ago?
But the mistakes he was making as well, they weren't...
Oh, there was a couple of...
Well, they weren't bad decisions, were they? They were, like, dropping the ball and slicing things. Some bad kicks.
So here's one. Henry Slade and Elliot Daly have had three tests in those positions, which you could say is a positive. I'm saying it's a positive because I think now we know... Not know. Now we can say... We need that the Slade train needs a replacement bus service for the time being.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with that.
And I just wonder, Elliot Daly at 13. I've said it for a while now. I think it could well be his best position.
Lozowski.
I know we've got JJ to come back. I know, well, if he doesn't fancy Lozowski at all in this series, I think that's...
Yeah, but he needs Eddie Jones, a man with so much pride. His hand needs to be forced, and it was forced with Cipriani. I don't know what the powers that be had to say about it, but his hand was definitely forced. The others, so I've just
Farrell. What's wrong with Farrell? You get Teo back.
Yeah, Teo's
Farrell, Teo, Daly.
Yeah.
With Watson at fullback, take your pick on the wings. I think you're starting to sound like a pretty tidy England backline, but anyway.
No. So you're wrong and you're right. You're wrong because England have an incredibly talented backline, powerful, quick, big. They've got it all. So close to the World Cup, after 2 years in this system, there shouldn't even be really debates as to who the best, you know, what the best combination is. It should be slowly evolving. I mean, it's fine to say, should May be on the wing or should Watson be on the wing? Or, you know, just, you know, little things like that. Do you know, like, with New Zealand now, we'll be talking like, yeah, Barrett's class, but maybe McKenzie needs a bit more of a, you know, small,
so, all right, so
small bits.
Based on what you just said, let me ask a question. Which positions, if we had a 15 in front of us, which positions could you write in confidently that they are definitely front runner in their position, 100% nailed on to be the front runner in their position for a World Cup?
Four.
Ben Youngs.
Oh, five.
And back line.
Are
we doing back line or team?
No, it's just a full team. Who would you say is like they are absolutely head and shoulders, the number one in their position, and almost you could almost pen them in as a starter in the World Cup?
Mako and Billy.
Mako, Billy, Marrow.
Yep.
Yeah. Although Marla had a superb game.
Yeah, I like Marla a lot.
Marla had a he played, if he didn't play 80 minutes, he certainly played 78 or 79
He just doesn't
minutes.
He doesn't get under pressure. He was just very, super, very,
very
good
busy. He needed, his career needed that performance.
Yes. Mako,
Marrow, Billy in the pack.
I would say Jamie George, but obviously Dylan Hartley as captain.
So we can't say that's a definite.
No.
After that, it's for me, it's only Farrell. I mean, I think Brown will make the team, but I don't know where.
Brown has played very well on the wings.
And but you wouldn't say he's a guaranteed penny
when,
name
when
on the team sheet.
Watson and Noel come back.
Yep.
Nope.
And there's a whole season to play, so probably Farrell in the back line only. And
Farrell's definitely starting. Depend who else is around him to say which position he's in.
Yeah. So four players in the whole England team. And I guess, picking up on what JB said, Joe Schmidt would be a lot further ahead than that.
Yeah.
Warren Gatland is probably now a lot further ahead.
Both are
ahead
a lot further.
I mean, both those coaches now are thinking, which are my best options? Not what does my team look like, but how do I fine-tune it? And I think Eddie's far away from that. And do you know what?
That is a big worry.
But 12 months ago, less than 12 months ago, in the Autumn International last year, I'd say he was pretty much there.
About this in the Autumn. I didn't think he was, actually. But they certainly seemed a bit more settled. I mean, I tell you one thing which has been far more successful than I thought it was going to be. And it does, you know, it does almost pain me to say it, but I actually think putting Mike Brown on the wing has worked rather well.
It did, and I think Elliot Daly...
Maybe not defensively.
Elliot Daly needed it. I thought Brown has been defensively solid. There's maybe once or maybe twice where, in that first test, where both of the South African wingers popped up onto his wing, and he was a little bit caught, but I'd say one of the best defensive plays, when Jesse Creel broke through, he's got the winger outside him.
Jesse
and Brown just buys time, reads when Jesse Creel is just releasing it and he's already set off. That was a brilliant bit of defensive play.
It was, but Jesse Creel also butchered that.
So Greenwood was analysing it on Sky, and he said he gave enormous credit to Mike Brown, said he did it perfectly, but also said Jesse Creel, he runs towards the touchline.
Yeah.
He's eating away his winger's space. He should have stepped inside, fixed Brown, and then given.
Well, not even step inside. Just keep going straight, because I think... Actually,
yeah, not a step inside. It's drift away from the touchline to create more space.
Yeah, it's almost like... I think Brown gets sold there. Brown's lucky, because Jesse Creel runs straight, throws a dummy, and just a little bit of movement. He's round him, because of the momentum. And that's what an international player should be doing.
Do you know what? Let's take away the conditions... Take away the fat Yanchis and Gallant and Chili Boy, greatest named
drugs cheat ever.
they all play. Take all those things away, and you've got, as you said, guys like Joe Marler, Chris Robshaw. They needed that match. Danny Cipriani is now an option.
A national hero.
Elliot Daly has three international matches back-to-back at full-back under his belt.
Do you know what worries me, though?
There's a lot of pieces of the jigsaw which are there. The jigsaw is far from being completed, but there are some pieces there.
So where this jigsaw is going to fall down horrendously, in my opinion, is that Eddie might, I'm going to even put it, he might have come up with a really nifty way to solve a few problems in England's back three, Mays on the one wing, and then the Daly Brown switcheroo, and it might work for him. And you could argue it's taken four games for two international class players to get bedded down in their new positions. Fine. But what happens when they go back to their clubs and Elliot Daly goes back onto the wing, Mike Brown goes back to fullback, and then you're going to have to play him back in those positions again just for him to get used to it. So I wonder how or if Eddie is able to make a phone call to Wasps or Harlequins to get them to revert back to how they were originally playing.
Well, club form is irrelevant, according to Eddie.
Which is stupid,
because
by the way.
It's stupid because, no, we don't want Don Armand there, but we'll have Nathan Hughes, who's woefully unfit.
And
gets smashed back 10 metres.
That was amazing. That was my favourite part of the whole game. That was just incredible.
He has been desperate. Eddie Jones has shown he's been desperate to have a big, an enormous number 8, because he's got Billy and Nathan Hughes, neither of whom are fit, who are both enormous. He's got Sam Simmons, who's fit and on form, but very small and light comparatively, certainly compared to those two and Vermaelen.
Absolutely right. But, what's the point in having a massive number 8 if the smallest player on the field just picks him up and runs back with him?
Yeah, exactly.
No point, is there?
Got to say, Gloucester have got themselves a hell of a player. Muster had an awesome game.
And Cipriani.
yeah.
The big winners.
Yeah.
So, Mustard was good. I tell you who wins a lot out of this is Billy Burns, because, of course, Sippers will be away now. He actually gets some more game time.
Just put Billy 12 trees to 10.
Yeah, and what are they going to do with Owen Williams?
Oh, yeah.
F- Fantastic story, though. Let the Brits play.
Did you see his
post-match chat?
Yeah, that was interesting.
He needs to talk to the wife. He's going to have a couple of beers and have a chat with people and see what gives. So I reckon there might be a South African franchise which will pick him up for the season to take him through to the World Cup. Because, again, Chilli Boy Ralapelli, you'd put Brits ahead of him.
He has got a job, hasn't he, with Rupert, whatever his name, or... Rupert.
Marks to come back.
There's two sides to this. One, Marks to come back, who is the form hooker in the world, or was last year. And Bismarck Duplessis as well can come back, which is one side. The other side is Scout Brits, who's got a job with
Johan Rupert?
Something like that.
Now, there's no way...
Saracen.
Yeah, there's no way that Rupert's holding this job open for him. I mean, it's too high paid. he's got to take it now or never.
He's also lined up to do a Masters
At
Oxford to play in the varsity match. He could put that off. Those things can hold up for one year to have a World Cup. Or 2 years to have a shot at the World Cup.
So I wonder if he'll go back to... where do you think he'll go then?
Well, it could be South Africa. I wonder if there was already a Saracens offer on the table. Perhaps a slightly lower offer than he was. But, look, here's an offer. You can take this or you can go and do... And he probably said at 37 or going on 38, I'll take the alternative. I wonder if that offer would be back on the table.
I also wonder, like, at 37, is Super Rugby where you want to be? Because Saracens is nice, isn't it?
Yeah, the miles that you travel playing Super Rugby as well, going to Argentina, to Japan, and to Australia, New Zealand.
Exactly, so I was thinking, like, for him, you'd have to go to Sharks or Stormers or someone because they're less travelling, but it's not less travelling. It's more, maybe. So it could be a massive shot in the arm for Pro 14 and maybe Cheetahs.
Yeah. I suspect any Premiership club would want to take him.
Premiership would be better for him, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's just less travel and better quality of life. And Saracens would be nice.
Saracens would work well, yeah.
Right, before we get into any other games, just a light interlude, an odd interlude. Have you seen... So the Premiership's getting... Oh, sorry, go on, JB.
Yeah, sorry. One last thing.
Oh, go on.
Did anyone see Andy Goode's tweet about Owen Farrell? Has anyone got anything to say about this?
So when Cipriani kicked the ball through and it looked like it was rolling away and out into touch, from a distance on the reverse angle of the camera, so from behind the dead ball line, you can see Owen Farrell sort of turn and start walking away.
Yeah.
It still looks like he's telling Sippers off, to be fair. I can't prove that.
That's speculation completely. Yeah.
It's so far away, so blurred and half out of shot. But he looked his body language looked annoyed
the way he
turned around. Yeah,
it did. I mean, you could argue England had advantage and he was going to where the penalty spot was. There's also another angle where you see him look back around and then celebrate the try. So I'm tended to say there's nothing to see here.
Yeah.
And what I don't mind the observation at all. It's quite a good spot.
It's a great spot.
It is a good spot.
It is a very good spot and it's quite interesting. I don't understand, and I see people do this quite a lot, why directly at Danny Cipriani and Owen Farrell in the tweet?
Yeah. Ooh! Shares, likes, something like that?
Yeah, I don't know, because Danny Cipriani replied, obviously, because that means that Danny Cipriani and Owen Farrell's Twitter accounts, I can't imagine Owen Farrell particularly looks at his, but Danny Cipriani I'm sure does. Danny Cipriani probably would have seen hundreds of replies and likes. What's going on here? What's this one about? Oh,
Goody, cheers, mate.
Right, someone's getting the wooden spoon in and having a good old stir. And so Danny Cipriani replied saying, "There's absolutely nothing. We're both delighted we won. We're teammates and we've been working hard together."
Yeah, well, I think Goody might have spotted something there. In fairness to him, and it's both understandable. I mean, it is understandable because of the pressure and all the rest of it. Maybe Farrell just got it wrong. I don't, on the other hand, think it is a very good... it's not a good example of how Farrell is on the whole, but he might have just got one thing wrong. It did look to me like the body language was negative.
It did look negative because I think he was just frustrated because he thought it wasn't going to be as successful as it was.
But I think Johnny May's utter gas is...
Reading anything more into it is...
Yeah.
The only thing you need to read into it is the genius of Danny Cipriani.
And Johnny May,
who has been superb.
You know, that was one as a part which kind of stuck with me is look at the contrast between the body language of Farrell and the never say die attitude of Johnny May. Just for that one play.
Johnny May, the way he celebrated that try, and also there was earlier in the game, the way he celebrated a penalty.
That was amazing. I love that. He's turning into a bit of a cult figure, is Johnny May.
He is. Brilliant.
He is brilliant. But Farrell's post-match chat was fantastic, and actually in this game, he led the team brilliantly, took his kicks well, kept on top of the penalty count, chatted to the referee at the right time in the right way.
Yeah, made the right decisions at the right time.
So I think what we can say is, albeit the conditions were different, the South African team was different, I know all those caveats, not getting carried away, but lessons seem to have been learnt.
Yeah, I actually felt that the other interview, Ben Young's, was a poor one, particularly considering his attitude last week. Just went on too long.
Yeah, he did. He hung around. He outstayed his welcome.
And that's rude.
These players being too giving of their time, hanging around, thinking they own the joint. They need to just answer one question quickly and do one. Right, Lima Sopawanga is going to be coming to the Premiership.
Oh no!
Have you seen his tweet?
I don't want to talk about him.
I have seen his tweet.
I've seen them. I think he's an arsehole. I don't want to talk about him.
Well, we're going to have to mention it now. You don't have to comment on it. I'll just say it because people haven't seen it.
Just say it.
Lima Sopawanga,
what are you doing?
He tweeted, on a wonderful weekend of rugby, he took the time to tweet, makes you think that if Grenfell burned for a few days and never collapsed, how did the Twin Towers collapse because of a fire? Lima.
Let's just.
Alan Sugar. Sorry. Lima Sopawanga.
Let's just put to one side.
Just stop.
No, let's just put to one side that disgusting tweet. 5,000 people died in the Twin Towers, and this idiot thinks it's a. Lima Sopawanga is a marvellous rugby player, but ultimately his main skills are the fact that he can run fast, pass a ball, and kick it.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the most vile tweets that a professional sports person has tweeted in a long, long time. 5,000 people died in one of the worst terrorist incidents to happen. In the Western world. And he thinks that is appropriate. He's an absolute disgrace.
I don't disagree. It was a stupid thing to do, but I would draw back from that. Let's be charitable to the guy and think he's not outwardly.
He is. He's an arse.
Disrespecting people that died in that tweet. He's just.
The implication is that somebody pulled down the Twin Towers, which is a disgraceful and disgusting thing to say. No matter which way you cut it, the guy's obviously got a bit of a screw loose.
I think that's more than enough time to give that.
I think that's going over the top, but yes. All right, fine. Let's talk about the big positive. Well, there's lots of big positives this summer, but Ireland, a first ever series win in Australia.
Yeah.
This team are the real deal. Are they ever going to have a better chance to win a World Cup? I bet they wish it could come this September, not next September.
Who, Ireland? Good.
Yeah.
I actually think they're in exactly the right place for World Cup because as good as they are, and they are very, very good, like they just need a little bit more bedding down for their younger players. Corby needs more time. Stockdale, maybe just one more Six Nations. And also, what's the other kid? Lama. You know, I think they're building perfectly.
But a couple of their most experienced and most important players, Sexton and Carney, Another 12 months of playing in Europe for Ireland.
But playing in the Irish provincial system with True. The IRFU involved means, as we saw, Conor Murray played, six Leinster matches? Munster matches. Six or seven the whole season. It's
in the Pro 14.
Yeah,
maybe it is. Maybe they are getting there in the right time. But regardless of whether it would be this autumn or next autumn, they're in a very good place. They've got depth in multiple positions, even though they probably know their starters in multiple positions. And they've just got options, and they've got guys who are getting experience of winning Pro 14 titles, winning European Champions Cup, soon to be called Heineken Cup, or Heineken Champions Cup rugby, winning Six Nations 3 times in 5 years, and successful tours. He had a successful tour to South Africa and successful tour to Australia. This is a very, very good Ireland team.
I completely agree.
Really is.
What's the other side of this coin, though? What about Australia?
Well,
Australia with Pocock. What? There's so right, much to love about that man.
Yeah, he is reaching the levels of Richie McCaw now, which is anything Pocock does at a breakdown is legal.
He's legal.
Yeah, by definition. Yeah. What is legal? Yeah. It's what Pocock does.
Yeah.
Whatever he's doing
right that second, regardless of whether he did anything like that previously.
Exactly.
Whatever he's doing at that very second is legal.
Yeah, he played well. He played very, very well.
He's played well all tour. And Australia, so they have markedly improved from where they were 12 months ago. Yeah. And part of that is getting the right experienced personnel back. Pocock being a prime example, Bernard Foley, Kirtley Beale playing well. And part of that is some of the younger lads or inexperienced lads.
Guys like him.
Yeah, Genya coming back, although he's obviously out now.
Yeah, obviously out now, but yeah.
But let's not underestimate how important Kirtley Beale is to this whole shooting match.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of guys who are very familiar names in the Australia setup, but who haven't really been either playing well or involved for quite some time, have made a big difference. As you say, Pocock, Beale, Genya.
Do you think the trend now is going to be to let all of your players dissipate and just go away somewhere for the 2 years after the World Cup and then try and bring them back as you build?
I think guys later on in their career, probably yes. I think guys earlier in their career when they've got less experience, they'll want to keep around the international setup as much as they can.
Because the only team not to do that, of course, is New Zealand. Keep everyone unless you don't need them.
But they have done.
They have done that. Carter had a little sabbatical.
Yeah, but the sabbaticals are very rare.
Carter's had two sabbaticals because he had the Perpignan sabbatical.
And then he had a complete
And then he had a six-month break, which yeah. McCall's
which
done
McCall
and Conrad Smith did.
And Ben Smith.
Kano went to Japan.
A sabbatical is different from going to, you know, for instance, Kirtley Beale goes to Wasps for a season to pick up God knows how much cash.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very different, isn't it, to sending Dan Carter surfing?
Yeah, yeah. The two are very different.
And they're still paid, aren't they, by the
NRFU or whatever they're called. Yeah, the All Blacks.
Whereas the Australian one is basically, go and pay this guy as much money as you can, and then we'll have him back. And same with South Africa, actually.
Yeah, South Africa's probably different again, because like Bernard Foley had a deal and... Pocock had deals to go away for a period of time knowing they were coming back, whereas South Africa they just leave the country to go and get the mega money indefinitely.
I've got a quick question, right? And this is just have a quick think. You don't need to do the maths. Who has the most expensive starting international 15 in terms of salaries paid to them by clubs?
England?
So remove their international
cash.
Who has got the most expensive starting 15? I bet it's South Africa, you know.
Well, South Africa's...
France would be up there.
France probably will be up there. England
definitely
probably up there. South Africa will be a mix because it depends what currency you're going to convert it to. but all the players playing in South Africa will earn significantly less than their counterparts playing in Europe.
That is true. But then some of the guys playing in Europe get paid... I mean.
Like, mega money.
If they've got the Bismarck and Kobach, and Faf is paid an ungodly sum, probably. What's the name? Vermaelen must be on some serious money.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, he's unattached.
He's now unattached after finishing.
Talking about going to the Bulls.
Yeah, after finishing with Toulon.
Christ, go back to France and make as much money
as
you can.
I was thinking in the previous two games, actually, less so in this one. I'd love to see Vermaelen in the Premiership.
Tell you what, Leicester Tigers would be a great landing place for him.
Anywhere.
anywhere.
Let me bring us back to Ireland, Australia with another controversial moment. I don't know what you can decide how much you think this is just stupid and how much you think this is what a lot of people are calling for, which is a sackable offence by a commentator. This is Phil Kearns on Australian TV. Is it Fox?
It's frustrating when you're trying to attack and you want to push a pass.
Yeah. Again, the referee's got to hurry the game up. He can't just let the Irish slow it down. Let them just like Brown's cows.
Yeah.
Fiddly-dee, 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 potato. Out the back there, having our own little chat.
I'm confused by this. Why was that clip interrupted by an Irishman? Philco's doing a great job, and then what, was someone just in earshot or?
Yeah, so he said fiddly D, fiddly D, fiddly D, potato.
Okay, well, it's, there
it's
you go.
An unusual thing to say live on TV. I'm not sure it's, a sackable offence, but no. I'm sure people will
potato
take offence.
Sackable?
No.
It's just disrespectful. He must know that Tig Furlong has an addiction to potatoes.
Yeah, by the way, they wrote that. You know, they wrote that in bloody Irish whatever it is paper.
Irish Independent.
Yeah, so fine.
Neil Francis, whatever he is.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Bless you. So come on then. There were a few talking points in terms of refereeing decisions. Where do you stand on the Folau? He has been cited for another incident, which was another kickoff. So there were three kickoffs in the match. Bernard Foley's kickoffs, combined with Israel Folau's incredible athleticism, is a real weapon.
Yeah.
It's a real weapon, but on three occasions, Peter Romani came down
God,
on his head or on his back or on his neck.
Yeah, there was
two of them the ref didn't do anything. One of them he gave
Folau. One of them looked really nasty.
And that's the one he's been cited
right,
for.
Okay. Well, he was in the air. I mean, there is no citing for me. There's nothing that he's done wrong. This is interesting because, as you were talking about Israel Folau, I think last week or the week before when Benjamin Fowl went off, there was active talk about law changes. And
active talk, or some people on Twitter
said.
There's a big difference.
Well, there isn't actually, because a lot of these things start with Twitter chat and they do develop in something else. One of the suggestions is banning jumping for the ball. It sounds ridiculous, but...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
You know, if you watched a game of rugby 10 years ago and showed them the product that we currently have, you'd think that is ridiculous too. And I thought, well, that's an interesting one, because if they did that, the value of people like Israel Folau would just plummet.
Yeah. He's still a very good runner, but half of what he does is the aerial stuff.
Everyone would be Christian Wade.
Like, what must... It's... Like, Australia's struggling rugby union-wise with audience, market share and interest in advertising money in Australia. What must Australians think when they have rugby league as a massive sport and ARL as a massive sport?
Yeah.
And then they must not recognise rugby union now.
No.
Now, I'm not being that all good old days and everything, but, like, jeez, you watch the Football World Cup and it is embarrassing the way that the players behave.
Yeah.
And rugby's so refreshing as a result that it's the honesty of rugby union.
Yeah, there is.
But the State of Origin game, did you see any of that?
No, but I do watch a lot of Super League.
Oh, I watched the State of Origin. Oh my, the physicality in that game and like the
headshots, blatant headshots,
the honesty where, or just at least the acceptance that accidents happen and that's part of the game and that's okay.
Yeah.
If as long as it's done with integrity and you're playing the game honestly. And I think in this occasion, in those kickoffs, Israel Folau, some people have said he knew what he was doing and he pulled Peter Omani down. I don't think he did. He's trying to grab at the ball because he's in a position to catch the ball. Accidents happen is the way I look at it. Let the boys play.
Yeah, he's in a position to catch. He's in the air as well, so you know, fine by me. But I guess it's the optics, isn't it, of Peter Omani landing on his shoulders and folding in half and all the rest of it.
Oh no, I don't doubt that. I'm not suggesting I expect it did hurt, but you jump up, you get lifted up to 10 feet in the air, and someone competes with you. Accident might happen.
Exactly right, Tim. I thought when you said the honesty, I thought you meant the honesty of players, the way that they can sometimes play up to it. Whereas in a game like League, you know, they are up onto their feet. If they're staying down, they are hurt. Do you know what I mean? Whereas sometimes in rugby union now, we are getting the impression that if you get taken out in the air, you're going to stay down for a little bit longer than maybe is necessary.
That's not what I meant by honesty, but I guess that's another little subtext there. Yeah.
But I think there's starting to become as big a gulf between rugby league and rugby union than there is between rugby union and football. It's starting to get that way.
I agree.
Now, there has been some interesting developments to the Benjamin Fall incident.
Yeah.
That you two discussed last week, and I thought your assessment of it was spot on, by the way.
Oh, thank you, Phil.
Although I probably...
Was mine more spot on than Tim's, or...?
Well, you were broadly agreed, so...
Oh, what a surprise sitting on the fence. Well done.
If you're both saying the same thing, I can't really side with one or the other of you. So then, a couple of days after that, there was the independent inquiry.
Yeah.
Now... The independent inquiry muddied the waters way more than either the current decision or the subsequent World Rugby statement. So they came and made this big play about determining Benjamin Fall's intent because his eyes were consistently on the ball, which is a very, very dangerous precedent to set,
because
in my opinion.
Because the whole point is your eyes are not supposed to be on the ball. They're supposed to be on the man in front of you, or scanning up.
No, that wasn't. Well, that wasn't the way that they were saying it.
Oh,
they were saying that because his eyes were on the ball, he couldn't have intended to do it.
Yes.
Therefore, it can't be a foul.
Right.
But
that's wrong.
Yeah. So that's wrong because that's not stated anywhere in the laws. And if you're going to take that approach to anything, there are a whole host of red cards, including Jared Payne for Ulster, including Elliot Daly for England against Argentina. There'll be dozens, hundreds of yellow cards or red cards for that kind of challenge that would no longer be that. Now, they also, in that statement, mentioned a mitigating factor, which was contact with Anton Linnett Brown prior to it, which... So, the independent statement made those two things.
Pinballed him into...
Yeah, and which happened less than a second before he would have tried to get into the air, which meant he couldn't get into the air, so he hit the legs of Beauden Barrett. Which I think is by far the more important element. And there has been a subsequent World Rugby statement to try and clarify things, even after their own panel muddied it. The subsequent statement says it ignores the intent, it ignores whether it was deliberate, it ignores whether his eyes were on the ball or not, but does state that because there was contact with another player that had a consequential effect, the decision... of the panel was correct.
World Rugby have created a rod for their back here with adding laws. It's a big problem.
There must be a way to write a law which doesn't intersect with legal language and framework, which sounds perverse when you say writing a law which doesn't intersect with that framework.
That's a sentence we shouldn't be saying on a rugby podcast, but this is where we are.
But, I mean, there has to be. I mean, there just has to be. We can't... I'll tell you a quick story. I was at Sale one time.
Ding.
Ding. And it was, I believe it was a Denny Solomona homophobia thing, right? And Sale now are relatively comfortable with how they defend their players. And for most disciplinary stuff, they'll just do it themselves. They'll do it in-house because they know what to do.
Yeah.
With the Denny Solomona one, they hired a barrister.
Yeah.
The reason that they don't do this for every one of their cases is because it costs so much cash. Now, how much money must be seeping out of the game to independent panels? Because they don't do it for free. They don't do it because they just love the game
of rugby.
Think of the one where Sean O'Brien was red carded, maybe, in the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had like
a bit of a swinging arm.
Yeah, 4 pages maybe of legal documentation.
4 pages?
I don't know how. It was huge.
20 pages? Yeah.
Yeah. For swinging arm.
These are way, way more than 4 pages.
And again, where is this money coming from? You know,
We've got the richest union in the game laying off a load of people at the moment in the RFU.
Which, by the way, not many people are talking about that.
Yeah.
I mean, they are laying off good people in normal jobs like, you know, in the press team, for instance, or you know, they because they've overspent on a stadium, and also the coach is on 600k.
Well, and the projected money that they were banking on coming in as actually hasn't materialised, televised television money, etc. So, yeah. So you're right, and it's just the fact you need 20 pages of documentation by legal professionals indicates that things aren't simple enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's the. I mean, the game has changed, and it's more nuanced, and the players are more different physical specimens, and we now have television angles from every which way. We now have another voice, the TMO, which I personally want to get rid of the TMO as a voice. Yes, you can press play on a VT of anything, and you can show a replay, you can show different angles. I don't want to hear your opinion. Leave that to the ref.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We've spoken in the past about where the TMO just like hints, yeah, won't make a statement like, I think that's a red card because XYZ.
Who was it? Said, look at that again.
Yeah, I think you should look at the contact again, or I think you should look at the angle again. And it's like, well, that is going to at least... the ref is going to infer from that he got his initial opinion wrong, so he's going to change his opinion, whether it was right or wrong or not.
And how many layers do you need? Because you've then got a sighting commission, then you've got a panel.
Yeah.
There's some things.
I firmly believe we should try and get the correct decision every time, and that often is not simple to determine in a short space of time.
Agreed.
But isn't the simple... The way that I deal with it as... a rugby player at lower league, right? And how I would say 99.9% of rugby players, not professional, but rugby players deal with it, is if the ref says something, that is the law at that time.
Yeah.
So maybe that's how they need to go back to looking at this, which is if that is the ref's decision, so be it. I mean, the vast majority of rugby games don't actually run on, you know, decisions from TMOs or even, you know, touch judges.
Problem with that is, in the big games, everyone in the stadium, 20 seconds after a try is scored or a foul is given, sees the replay, and a million people around the world see the replay.
Why don't we just get replays?
The halfway house.
Back to the dark ages.
Yeah. The halfway house here. And do you know what? I've been really impressed with Steve Hansen through the New Zealand France series.
Yep.
He's been talking a lot of sense.
He has, yeah.
And he said...
Only because he's winning.
He said, we need to... He said, I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but what the heck. I think the TMOs have too much influence. I'm paraphrasing here. TMOs have too much influence. I want a coach's challenge. We get two challenges a game. If we get one wrong, we lose it. If we get it right, we keep it.
Yeah.
That means it's only the coaches. But then
you're adding, like, I mean, the NFL do it, don't they, with their red flags.
Yeah.
And that's exactly fine. But you kind of add another aspect to the game, and then you make coaching more important, and it is literally like a 16th man then. Which is, it was never designed to be.
I prefer it being Michael Checker and Joe Schmidt making that call rather than a nondescript person in a shipping container.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, or give it the captain. Let the captain do, like you do.
Captain is a captain.
Like you do in cricket and like,
yeah, captain's a much
tennis. They
idea.
Can challenge, can't they?
Because I don't like the idea. What they say in football, what FIFA used to say about VAR or what a video assisted ref, is that the game at the highest level will not look like the game at the lowest level. And that was a really good point I felt that they made, which is we want the game consistent from your Sunday league sport all the way up to the highest level. I could live with the captain saying, though, can you refer that?
I don't think there's many people still saying that now, a week into a Football World Cup.
Do you not think?
No.
Maybe not. I mean, look, it swings and roundabouts because a lot of people do like the video ref. I'm not against it. I'm just saying that might be another way.
A lot of people don't like... And video ref has another problem in football because football is normally a much, much quicker game, whereas rugby league, rugby union, cricket have much longer breaks.
You've got a natural break.
Yeah, you do.
Just on Steve Hansen. It's very easy, isn't it, to be magnanimous when you're winning. Now, do you remember one of my favourite... So my two favourite rugby instances of the last couple of years. One was Rob Evans telling the ref, let the French use whichever substitutions they want.
We don't care.
We don't care. And gets pushed over. And the other one was Kieran Reid, right, coming over to Sam Warburton when the penalty is conceded from Ken Owens, tapping him on the arse, goes, hey, mate, that's rugby. And then the referee gets the information from the from the video ref. He goes, "What? What? I wish Sam Warburton had just turned around and said, 'Hey, mate, that's rugby.
Yeah. He's like, No, sir,
you don't understand. That's rugby."
Well, there was one. So Johnny Sexton, there was a great moment when he assumed the Irish captaincy in that game, and he went up to the ref. Yeah. And went, "I know you hate me, but you have to talk to me now," which is great. But there was two moments which was a little bit different. Like Johnny Sexton, he's such a great player. He's so easy to dislike. On the field.
I would love Sexton.
I think it's how a lot of people feel about Farrell. If you're English, you love him. If you're another nationality, you kind of begrudgingly like him, or you dislike him even. And Johnny Sexton, the thing was. Was there an Irish player got a yellow card?
There was in the previous.
Yes, there was definitely. Test.
No, there was a moment in this test when Pocock and Sexton were chatting about something. And
was it Stockdale? Forearm to face.
It was Stockdale. Yes,
Stockers.
When Stockers got his yellow card again, not a yellow card I particularly like because. Well, I'll tell you what, one incident with the Stockers, right? Stockers is 6'4", 6'5".
Big boy.
And he was running at a really little fella. Was it Bernard Foley?
Yes, it was.
And did offend. Last week, in the second test, England-South Africa, Faf de Klerk tackled an England player, and his head hit the England player's head. Now, you changed the players round, and it wasn't Mike Brown. It was Mike Brown's head hitting Faf de Klerk's head, causing Faf to fly backwards.
Faf's got a bit of a record at doing
then,
this.
Then Mike Brown gets a red card, but when it's a little guy... nothing happens, and I think it was like this with Stockdale again. It was the scrum half, but Stockdale, the scrum half does that at Fens, and it hits Stockdale's head.
Oh, Phipps.
Nothing happens. I don't like this big guy rubbish. I really dislike it.
Which is why I just do it in real time.
Yeah, exactly.
Just do it in real time.
So anyway, while Stockers got his yellow card, Pocock was stood by the referee, as was the Omani. And Pocock looked really disappointed and shook his head and then said to Peter Armani, "I'm sorry, mate. I'm really sorry about that," because he didn't agree with the yellow card. Fast forward to Folau's yellow card, and Pocock stood there going, just shaking his head, and Sexton's went, "Yeah!" and did a big celebration.
That's fly-halves. I mean, let's go through the fly-halves. Johnny Sexton, yep. Dan Bigger.
Oh, God,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Finn Russell, probably. There's a little bit of that in him.
Yeah, a bit of niggle.
Farrell.
Of mouth.
George Ford's a nice boy.
Yeah, George Ford's
he's got a little
nice
bit
boy.
Of that terrier about him, hasn't he?
He's a nice boy.
He gets angry.
He gets angry, frustrated.
Cipriani, he's got his detractors. The nicest fly half by a country mile, the nicest guy, is AJ McGinty. You will not find a nicer man in rugby than AJ McGinty.
I think Freddie Burns is excellent.
Yeah, Freddie Burns is cool.
Reece Priestland's
a nice guy, actually.
I like Tranduc as well. I'm a big fan of Francois Tranduc. Mm.
I don't know much about the French. I don't know how their attitudes translate, so I can't quite tell.
Was Francois Tranduc one of the eight in the incident in Edinburgh? I can only assume not.
No, I don't.
I've got nothing
probably...
to back that up, but I'm certain he's too much of a
he's
nice
boy. He's FaceTiming his wife.
Yes.
He's a nice boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Ireland are so incredibly poised where they are, aren't they? This was such a brilliant series. I think the aggregate score over three tests was even.
Really? That's excellent.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what I liked about this. So the series, the first test, you saw the kind of disruption and domination of Hooper and Pocock.
Yeah.
And Ireland learnt from it in the second test. It's something... So Joe Schmidt is very good. He's very magnanimous in his post-match press conferences. And that was one of the kind of key takeaways that he had. In both the second and the third test, they identified when Hooper and Pocock, the guy carrying the ball did the extra bit of work, and then the guy supporting them was that yard closer and hit immediately to blow away. And it was not in ones, it was... Two or three guys.
Are a very interesting machine, Ireland, aren't they? How quickly they adapt and learn. And how... I mean, Wales are actually a bit like this, or they used to be, which is they can implement a new strategy incredibly quickly.
Yeah.
Whatever that strategy may be.
Saracens are, at club level, one of the best at identifying where it's going wrong. And if they're losing at half-time, they very rarely are at full-time.
Yeah. What was I going to mention about... I've forgotten. Forget it.
So well done, Ireland, on a first ever series victory
And they get the Lansdowne Cup.
Yeah, there you go.
What is the Lansdowne Cup?
Don't know.
Not as coveted as the JB Cup, obviously.
No, it isn't as coveted. Now, actually, there is one more thing I wanted to bring up. I know it's not on your list, Tim, but I'm going to add it. Who in your mind are England's most most played against opponents? I mean, certainly in my mind, right, it is the Six Nations teams, because they play against each other every year.
But sure. They only play once per year.
Exactly. This is exactly where I'm going.
Yeah.
So in reality, the teams they play probably the most, or the teams that they really shouldn't, i.e. Australia, or in this time frame, it's going to be South Africa. I think they've played South Africa four times in...
Four times back to back.
Yeah.
Because they're the first game in autumn as well.
Okay, I'm curious how this is going.
Hang on. So they played... they played them in this autumn.
They play November the 3rd. They play them again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So they've got these three, and then South Africa again.
So in 12 months, they'll have played South Africa five times.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, so we always think of the Six Nations teams as the teams that they play the most. Actually, it's not always the case.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want a tour. I want England to tour somewhere else. I want them to tour France in the summer. Because I know it sounds stupid, and you take two of the big teams out of the summer tours, but... They can they can do other things. It also gives the tier two nations a bit of an opportunity to go to those bigger Southern Hemisphere stadiums, which they don't really do.
Yeah.
But think about how amazing it would be for the England fans to go and watch France at England in Paris, Lyon, Marseille, or Toulouse. I mean, that is a real tour.
It's a lot more accessible, certainly, than a 20-hour flight to South Africa.
We would be all over that.
I would be all over it, certainly. I mean, what a great way to spend your summer holiday.
Yeah.
And, you know, even better, I mean, you know, a tour for a single national team would be great. A Lions tour to France would be even better. The midweek games.
Yeah, poor France. They get left out of all of that, don't they?
Clermont.
Yeah, they're still playing top 14 at that. Yeah, when the Lions is on.
Well, they've got their first round of the top 14 just before the last round finishes, the final. So you might have to double up. But yeah, I would like to see England tour France. I don't know if the Money Men can make it happen. I mean, they should be able to.
Well, maybe
it's a phenomenally profitable tour.
Maybe we can make it happen if we just abandon tours to Argentina, because they don't seem to give a damn.
Oh,
this is
bad, isn't it?
Well, I'm just so surprised. After the improvement that the Jaguares... have been showing this year, I expected them to be more than competitive against both Wales and Scotland. And admittedly, I only watched the first half of this week's game, in which Scotland scored virtually all their points. But it wasn't even close. It was 37-3 at half time. It was just total one-way traffic.
Yeah, it sort of does put a downer a little bit, doesn't it, on Wales' victories?
It does, yeah. It does question how much we've learnt about Wales's strength in depth and the change up and the performances, because Scotland did play very well.
Oh, they did. But, we've got to give them credit.
Yeah, Scotland do deserve credit. But some of the defensive positioning and attempted tackling by Argentina was, well, non-existent.
Well, you've got to ask yourself as well, I mean, if Scotland did this to Argentina, what would USA do?
USA, who had a resounding victory, 42-17 against
Russia?
Canada.
Canada are in a bad place, though.
Yeah, Canada are not in a good place.
I mean, they were one of the founding members, weren't they, original countries in the World Cup?
They were in the 87 World Cup, yeah.
And I think they've been in most World Cups.
Yeah
they've...
if not all.
I'm going to name drop here, but twice I've spoken to a certain Jamie Cudmore.
Yeah,
about the plight of Canada, and it's overwhelmingly negative from their players.
Yeah, the other result this weekend that was quite interesting: Japan played Georgia,
and
comfortably spanked them
28-0.
28-0.
Well, sorry, who beat who?
Japan.
Japan beat Georgia.
Japan handily beat Georgia.
Bloody hell!
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not a result I was expecting at all.
No, me neither.
Because I thought even if Japan have got slightly more speed and skill in the backs, just that Georgian pack. That Georgian pack is a match for absolutely anyone. So that's really encouraging for Japan. If their pack can at least get parity. I've not seen any of the game.
No, I've not seen the game. But you've got to remember, the Japanese pack got parity with South Africa.
It did.
You know, and they have conniving little tactics to get around all this. So I don't know what these tactics are.
Just going back to Scotland and touching on Wales, I think what Wales did get and what Scotland got from this game against Argentina was some confidence in the depth of their squad.
Yeah.
So Wales have, in some key positions, can confidently say, yeah, we're actually going to have a squad of 30-odd men going to a Rugby World Cup that we know can do a job at international level.
Yeah, I mean,
they
could literally afford for an aircraft to go down on its way to the open side flanker conference and still be able to put out an open side flanker.
Completely agree.
Well, did you see who plays open side flanker for Scotland?
No.
Oh, the hooker.
Fraser Brown.
Yeah.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He has played there a little bit before.
Just trolling Argentina, that, isn't it?
It is. But him and McAnally, who scored a brilliant try, admittedly some suspect defending on the Argentine side, but a brilliant finish. They've got two quality hookers there.
Yeah, McAnally, who was he exactly before Fraser Brown got injured? Opportunity. It's all about opportunity.
And they're at halfback, you got the wee young Horn lad.
George Horn.
George Horn looks very tidy. And Adam Hastings, three caps to his name.
Yeah.
Looked class, actually.
And add that, because this is a very inexperienced back line, with Nick Grigg, who played well again, bulking through the centre, and Blair Kinghorn.
Blair Kinghorn.
Who I like a lot.
Yes.
He's a good rangy runner. Saw him a couple of years ago up in Edinburgh against Ulster, playing at 15, which is his preferred position. Mm-hmm. He's a very handy young man. So.
I think you could confidently say if Maitland or McGuigan went down injured, then Kinghorn's worth the place on the bench and would come in and slot in and be comfortable. So
yeah.
And it was the chap who played 12.
It was Peter Horn.
Peter
playing.
Horn, yeah.
Peter and George playing.
I think he could be the first choice 12 for Scotland now. He's that balance that he gives him with the kicking game, and he's a tough, nuggety little fella as well.
It depends if you want to go for, because he's more of a ball player. He's got great hands, or I can't remember the other chap's name, the big inside centre.
Not Hugh, that's the outside centre.
No, not Hugh Jones. Anyway.
Yes, you know who we're talking about. Apologies.
Yeah, him. That guy.
That guy.
Yeah. So, very positive. But as much as it's positive for Wales and Scotland, it's just a real shame to see Argentina like that. Because, well, Argentina and do their... where they make their stories and where their legend and their the love people have for them comes from is in World Cups.
It is. And it'll be a shame if they don't perform as we know they can. Although... they are in England's group, aren't they?
Yeah, so are France.
So maybe it's not a bad thing for Argentina to be
that's a fair
struggling
point. What am I
a
talking
bit.
About?
So we've got France,
Argentina,
England,
USA, Tonga.
What a group that is to be following. Yeah. If you happen to be in Japan following it.
If you possibly were.
Oh, goodness me.
Have you booked flights and stuff?
No.
Can't book flights yet.
What we've got, tickets and that's it.
Tickets, yeah. We're locked in on our Team USA tickets.
I've said this before. I might go out for the group stages, then go back out again for World Player of the Year.
So World Player of the Year is straight after the final.
Straight after the final. That is going to be one hell of a night out.
Yeah. Get accreditation for the final.
Yeah, let's see what we can do.
Hold on. It's not in Monaco, or is it in Monaco?
No. So
World Player of the Year is in Japan.
In Tokyo.
Yeah, so World Player of the Year this year is in Monaco. Obviously, we'll be going to that.
Yeah.
World Player of the Year next year is straight after the World Cup final.
Ah.
So you play the World Cup final, you go and have a few beers. Next day, you get in your tux and you go to World Player of the Year in Japan. In Tokyo.
Oh, right, okay.
So I'm going to do the first lot, then fly out for the next lot, I think.
So yeah, it'd be about 2 weeks afterwards.
Yeah. I'm going to have some serious words with my employer. If anyone can swing it, it'll be me.
Well, you work so hard all the rest of the time.
Exactly.
I can't make plans on anything because I need to know what the domestic rugby season looks like in a World Cup year.
Oh, that's a good point. You don't know, do you?
Well, because of the last World Cups when I actually got an opportunity because everyone else was off.
Oh, is that right? Is that
everyone
what
else was
it?
Off with ITV, so they went. Got a little spot for a reporter here. Do you want to give it a crack, Tim? Yeah.
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah, I did not. All right.
So was the second. So we had a very good World Cup final. We went to Bath and watched Bath versus Harlequins. Is that second round or first round of the Premiership?
Yeah, first few rounds of the Premiership where Harlequins hammered Bath.
Yeah, I was Bath. Great day.
When
out.
You were trolling Dave Ward.
Yeah, when
we poor yeah. Dave Ward. I do apologise to him for that. But yeah, Bath. If you want to go on like a little rugby tour to watch rugby on TVs in a different town, go to Bath and try and tie up with a game. Phenomenal yeah. place.
Yeah, I'd be up for doing something like that again.
No, I'm going to Japan, mate. So
okay.
Speaking of which, it's only in the next week or so. Premiership fixtures will get unveiled, and all the domestic fixtures. We've got the European.
We have got
Champions Cup pools, which are tasty.
Oh, I watched this live. One of the benefits of being on holiday with your family is that you can watch the European pools being drawn live.
Yeah, and can I say I just want to praise the integrity of Austin Healey at making sure nobody could possibly think that he was looking at the ball he was taking out. He had a brilliant. He was brilliant. He looked right away.
Yeah.
And reached in. It was.
Any pools which are particularly exciting for you?
Well, they all are. They all are now. Yeah. Particularly, they all are because of the lack of the Italian teams. There's no one.
That's a very good point.
You don't have the Italian.
Your beloved Benetton, JB.
Well, I'm very torn this year, right? Because there is one pool in particular which is very attractive. Very attractive.
Ulster's pool.
Nope.
It is the Saracen, the one with Leon.
Leon
is an attractive pool, yes, but no. Not
although
that one.
Poor Carl Ferns, who's coming back, recovering from a knee injury currently, and he's excited that he's going to be playing back on English soil again. Was waiting to see the pool draw, and he just happened to pick. Leon just happened to have got the three teams in the European Cup with synthetic pitches.
Yeah, so
three of the four. They've got three out of the four in their pool.
Oof.
So Carl Ferns is in poor knee.
Yeah.
But Carl Ferns versus Billy Vunipola, I cannot wait for.
Yeah.
Only one winner.
Well, hopefully at least one of them will be fit by that stage.
That's also a good point.
So pool one, Leinster, Wasps, Toulouse, Bath. It's pretty tasty.
Well, Leinster, clear favourites.
Clear favourites. Cast, Exeter, Munster, Gloucester. Pretty
now that's,
tidy.
Yeah. Very so Cast... If they can perform half as well as they did in the final of the top 14 to win it,
yeah,
and then I think Exeter Munster will be a couple of really tasty games.
Yeah,
that feels nicely balanced.
Exeter Munster are definitely ones to watch. Saracens Glasgow, Leon Cardiff,
which you'd say Saracens.
Saracens would be the favourites. Scarlets Racing Leicester Ulster.
I'll be interested to see what Scarlets do against Racing. I think that'll be a nice.
You've got to say Scarlets are the favourites to come out of that pool.
Yeah.
Quite comfortable, I'd say.
Leicester and Racing just seem to get each other
constantly. Yeah.
Death, Taxes and Leicester getting Racing in the pool stages of the Champions Cup. And Montpellier, Newcastle, Edinburgh, Toulon.
Montpellier and Toulon. Edinburgh and Newcastle won't be especially happy with that, but
no.
Montpellier and Toulon will be interesting.
So, you've still not mentioned the best group.
I've mentioned all five, so...
You've not mentioned the best group. The best group is actually not even in the Champions Cup.
In the Challenge Cup.
Has it got sail in it?
It has got sail in it. How are these for away days? Oh, whoops. For away days, right, they've got Connacht, which is going to be a brilliant place to visit. And for the more sophisticated among us... What's going on here? Bordeaux.
Ooh. And Perpignan.
Oh, yeah. Yes! Perpignan's a two-hour drive from Barcelona.
I agree. If you're a sail fan, that is a fantastic set of away days, JB.
Oh, no, that is just a good, solid pool. And also, Paddy Jackson is playing at sail, after all.
Yeah.
Oh, he is.
With a Perpignan shirt on.
Shouldn't
there be some protesters when he steps foot on English soil?
Who cares? Arrest them. So... In terms of, let's not just talk about rugby, because rugby's boring to a certain degree. Which is the best pool for away days?
If we could draw up a fantasy pool from Europe.
Well, no, the actual real ones.
Oh, the actual real ones.
The actual real ones.
For away days.
Yeah, so I reckon you've got to have Toulouse in there.
Well, the problem is, So Toulouse would almost be the perfect. You've got Leinster, Dublin.
Yep.
Toulouse.
Perfect.
Bath.
Yes.
Coventry.
That lets it down, doesn't it?
Sorry.
I mean, good atmosphere. They do well.
Yeah, but I don't want a night out in Coventry.
In Cov.
If you could have replaced Wasps with Benetton,
we could have gone
Prosecco tasting in Benetton in Treviso.
From a rugby purist point of view, the best pool with the best grounds to go to, the best atmosphere and the like rugby knowledgeable crowds, Exeter, Munster, Gloucester, and Cast is pretty good.
Yeah, all four's not bad as well. Scarlets Racing in their new stadium, Leicester, Ulster.
How about this for the worst group? Claremont, I've never been there. Is it any good?
It's meant to be incredible, the atmosphere. It's one place I really want to go.
I've just lost it now.
And the most Michelin star restaurants in any city because it's where the Michelin brothers are from.
We exclude Claremont, but you've also got to go to Newport Gwent Dragons.
Oh, right, okay. Rodney Parade to the Marcel de Michelin.
And also Northampton, which, not for me.
And Timișoara Saracens in Romania.
Now, it has been suggested, so let's bring this forward. We don't have to make any decisions, we don't have to talk about it. But we may well be so upset with Rugby Europe and their handling of the Tier 2 competition that we don't want to give them the attention until they sort put their house in order.
Maybe.
So potentially a European weekend could potentially replace a Tier 2 tour.
It could
do. Interesting. So we'd have to do it either probably December or January if we're going to do that. Or wait until the quarterfinals. But the problem with that is...
Yeah, you can't make plans.
Yeah.
Well, I do have an open invitation to the Pacific Nations Cup, if anyone's interested.
I looked up Timișoara, and it's the third biggest...
Second, isn't it?
It's the third biggest city in Romania. So I'm not sure it would satisfy our...
Our thirst for
refreshments.
Yeah, look, the first biggest city in Romania was worth a visit once.
Yeah.
Yes. There was not much of that city that was really worth a visit. Mojo's Bar and the spa.
It was interesting. It was interesting. It was good to watch rugby. Personally, I feel very wedded to my second or third or fourth or fifth team, whichever they are, Spain. I'd like to go back.
Who's even going to be in that competition next year? We need to get to the bottom of all this as well.
There's also Portugal. Yeah.
I think Portugal... Well, they were playing Germany, weren't they?
I was going to say, Germany are going to the World Cup. Maybe we should go and see what Germany
are. No, Germany aren't.
Oh, no, they aren't.
Russia are. I don't want to go there.
Germany I'd be up for. If Germany can qualify for the World Cup, they might deserve a visit.
Germany maybe. Portugal. That sounds like the one to me. They've already been to a World Cup. It's a bit further south. It might be a bit warmer. And also, they do cool things in Portugal, like custard tarts and port. That's very cool.
I could be up for
it. Options should be kept open at this point.
Yes.
Because a European weekend would also be good. There'd be wall-to-wall rugby across the weekend.
When are we going to do the Sunday night?
One live game becomes the focal point.
That is quite good. Benetton.
I'd be up for a trip to Benetton.
Benetton!
I would be up for a trip
JV's beloved Benetton.
This year.
A trip to Treviso could be...
It's going to be a great little town.
Yeah, and very, very easy to get to. Anyway, if you've got any thoughts on that, at Rugby Podcast, tweet us. After all, it's you we're going to be asking to come along and making it happen. So
I don't really mind if they come or not. Interesting. Right, well, I think this podcast is done. And more importantly, we've got Love Island in 10 minutes, Tim.
Phil, are you all right with the fact that JB and I have... It was... Right, can I just point this out?
I went away for 1 week. And when I came back, you two were doing a Love Island podcast.
Have you watched Love Island?
I can honestly tell you I've not seen a single
second. Have you listened to our podcast about Love Island?
Also, no.
What?
I've not watched any of it.
My goodness.
Yeah, that's the whole point. You need to watch Love Island. Listen to Love Island.
We've
podcast.
Converted like wing commanders in the RAF to Love Island just on the basis of listening to the podcast.
Titans of Industry listen to Love Island.
Titans of Industry and the men.
Doctors.
Yeah, doctors, medical marvels, and medical marvels. Military masterminds listen to our podcast and now watch Love Island. So,
oh,
yes.
If anyone out there knows Sam Davis, the Welsh fly-half, and wants to get me in touch with him, because he's a big Love Island fan too, please do so, because we want him on the Love Island podcast.
So yeah, JB and I, so this it was while you were away, and I was sat in the chair you're sat in, Phil, and we finished our podcast, and then we were talking about Love Island, like about how outrageous and terrible it was, and JB just went right and hit record, and we just started chatting, and
that was it,
and it snowballed from there, and mate, it's this is now the second most popular podcast we did.
Yeah, you were featured in the Guardian, I believe.
Guardian, they clearly have no idea about my background.
All right, so at Rugby Podcast, you know where to find us: Twitter, Facebook, all the rest of it. And we'll see you next week. We will still be doing a podcast, despite the fact there is very little rugby to speak of actually happening. But
we'll work it out, though.
We'll find stuff to talk about, and we'll keep you entertained with rugby over the summer. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Colombia.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.